Oh, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Get on with it.
Toppy, toppy.
It's Blackcap.
Hashtag fuck Ennis.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and down.
Where's on? Bye-bye.
Come on.
Hello and welcome to a Bergkamp Wonderland, an Arsenal podcast. The podcast that does not regret its move to Newcastle. I am your host, Chris, and tonight I am joined by an esteemed group of panellists and Danny. First up, it is the man, the myth, the living legend himself. It's Mr. Gunaholic. Hello, Dave. How are you, sir?
Good evening, Chris. I'm fine, thank you very much. Great to be back again.
Jolly good. First questions, Dave. Who won the 4-10 at Aintree?
I'm afraid I don't know, but I suspect it was a bloody good horse.
Just in case you're wondering, Dave's having to use his mic in the fashion of either a racing commentator or an 80s John Motson tonight for sound quality purposes. So bear with us. Good to have you aboard, Dave. Also, I've spoken to this guy more in a week than I probably have done in the last year. Isn't that right, Josh Dawe?
Oh, it probably is. We'll be sick of the sight of each other, and it'll be another year after this, I can only assume.
At the very least, I'd imagine. But I'm not as sick of you as I am of Jace yet. So it's all good. It's all fine. It's all dandy.
Tappy-tappy
indeed. And last but not least, Danny, he has to be here. Right, let's get on with the show. Oh, hi, Danny. You're right, you big bold fuck.
If anybody in Croatia sees a gobby bird with too much brown hair and a big booty, that would be my offspring. Be nice to her.
God bless, Sean. I'm sure she's having a lovely time. Yes. Right, Danny. We're going to talk about Arsenal, obviously, because that's what this podcast is about. But before we do that, I'm going to do a last-minute plug, everybody.
Go on, then.
I'm going to do a last-minute plug. As you probably will be aware, I've been begging you all summer. The Pirates draw comes to an end tonight. But not just tonight. It comes to an end at the end of this show. So if you have got some spare pennies and you want to donate them to, I would say to me, it's not to me at all, it's to my club. If you want to donate a £5 or more donation to the Pirates draw, where you can win a She-War clock, a She-War watch, which are both fantastic prizes. You know where to find them by now. Gav's at She-War on Twitter. You can see pictures of them if you wish. If you want to win one of those, donate £5. Danny will explain how in a short moment when I throw to him. Third prize, and by no means the lesser of the prizes, is a Pirate shirt of your choice. And in a world exclusive, I have those shirts here tonight for you. Now, you've all seen this one. This is our new home shirt, delightfully resplendent there. I think you can see that nicely. Angle's terrible. Complete with ABW on the sleeve there. Look, beautiful. And she wore. So there you go. There's that one. If you wish to choose that one. Or you could maybe choose, this is the grand reveal of our away shirt. Oh, look at that. Look. Navy blue and gold, very swish. So that is a first reveal. No one has ever seen that yet.
It's very nice.
And last but not least is our third shirt, our cup shirt, which is a nice fetching shade of gold, which is still in the works, but you can have one of those as well. Fully personalizable, if that's even a word. In other words, you can have your name and number on the back. You can have ABW on the front if you wish. You can have it on the front and the sleeve in any way you want, if you are the winner, of course. If you just want to purchase one of our shirts, drop me a little DM and we can sort you out with those as well. Unfortunately, that's just at cost because, you know, we've got to make some money somewhere. But if you want your own personal Bubblegum Pirate shirt, let us know. And if you're able to donate, please do. As I say, the draw will be done at the end of this show. And for those of you in the chat box who've already donated, thank you. I love you very much. You're very, very kind. And on behalf of myself and all the boys, we appreciate you. Right, that's the shilling done. Let's get on with the podcast. So Josh and I are going to kind of rotate hosting duties tonight so that everyone can have a good say. We're obviously going to talk about Northland and Derby. And we're going to start, of course, with Dave because he was there. Dave, before we've done all the teams and that on the live show, if you haven't listened to that already, what on earth have you been doing with your life? Get on it. But I want to talk to you about the atmosphere. You were there on Sunday. It's fair to say, I think, that the atmosphere was one of the best it's ever been. But I think it's gone a bit under the radar that since that lot got their own new stadium, we seem to have upped the ante a bit, haven't we? Almost sort of said, you know what? Fine, they can have their glittering new stadium. That's all well and good. We're going to prove that we can get an atmosphere rather than some bloke filming the whole game or playing poker on his phone, whatever that bloke was doing at the Spurs ground. Just talk us through the kind of the match day experience that you had personally on Sunday and how you took in the game yourself.
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay better now? I've found a setting.
That's a bit better.
Very good.
Ah, excellent. Well done. Okay, yeah, Sunday was just, atmosphere-wise, was absolutely kicking. I got there about 12:30 because I didn't want to miss the kickoff. And I wanted a couple of Bloody Marys first. I did a little bit of a pub crawl. What was going on around the pubs in the area was just unbelievable. Not heard it really since the days of the Wenger success years when every pub used to be kicking. But this is before the game and this is not after the game. And it was great to see, great to hear, most of it. Sad to say the Y word is still being used. Rather more than it should. Well, it shouldn't be used at all, but that was the only blot on the copybook. But everybody was obviously kicking by the time they got in the ground. When the teams came out, it just ramped up in volume and it continued throughout the game. And I'm sure it was a part of what contributed to the side coming back when it all looked lost at 2-0 down. So, yeah, I remember Barcelona at home was quite a night for atmosphere, but I think this was the day that it really kicked in. And, you've got the Ashburton Army boys at the clock end who have now started revving that up as well. And it's great to see and great to hear. And great to be a part of. And even in the West Stand lower, where I am, which is usually the most conservative part of the ground, lots of people singing. Good to see.
Good stuff. Just sticking with you for a second on that as well. You've been going to the old ground and the new ground for many years now. Do you see that there's a concerted effort or change this season? We've seen what's gone on off the pitch with Raul Salehi and the ownership and seemingly Josh Kroenke's attempts to at the very least say all the right things. Do you feel like the club are doing some of the right things off the pitch? I know they've got a new beer sponsor, haven't they? They're looking to get the local community in a bit more involved. Have things changed a little bit this season or is that just things you'd expect to see, do you think?
No, I think that's a fair comment. There is, I think the response of Josh Kroenke to the original letter that was calling for change was partially good. We still have to see some things in terms, I think, of the board, the makeup of the boardroom. But generally, I think things have been positive. And you mentioned the new brewery. And obviously, there are lots and lots of people who like the new beer. I had a pint on Sunday and left 3/4 of it. But then I'm an old fart, so it doesn't make any difference. But yeah, I think generally there are signs of progress. Lots and lots of signings, lots and lots of change. And you can't ask for more than that. But what you have to do is judge where it takes us. So if at the end of the season, I can't believe we won't finish third, but if we don't finish in the top four, it will be a major disappointment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think people have to slightly remember that we're still in the process of kind of rebuilding a lot from the inside out and the outside in. We're still a work in progress, which I think a lot of people have very sort of kindly forgotten while they're talking about Chelsea and Man United rebuilding. I think they haven't quite noticed the fact that we're doing the same thing. But less of that for now.
Yeah.
Josh, we had a chat on Sunday after the game. Obviously, we've covered the finer points of the game. So we're just going to drill down a little bit into some of the major talking points of that game. One of the biggest issues, quote unquote, that's come out of that is the Grand Xhaka debate, whether he should be playing, whether he should be flung out on the Mustafi bandwagon, whether it's just one of those things that he'll never change about his game, his impulsiveness. We saw that ridiculous penalty. Obviously, we discussed that on the live show. But having had a few days to just take your thoughts in and assess it, where are you now? Are you still of the opinion that he weakens the side? Are you of the opinion that we should be looking to go in a different direction post-international break?
Well, it's an interesting point for, you know, because he has said some choice things during the international break as well, which I think it seems to be something that, you know, when these players go on international duty, they almost forget that club football still exists and make some of these comments that will only come back to bite them on the backside. In terms of what I think about him on the pitch, because I think that's truly how we should judge him rather than anything off it. We've had players before that have been superb for us off field, but if they're not going to offer us anything on the field, that's, you know, at the end of the day, we're a football club and we need people, especially in the playing staff, that will benefit the team on the field as well as off it. So it's one of those, because he has been a key starter for us for four seasons or so. Absolute regular under Wenger, and again has only missed, I would say, a handful of games, certainly in the league under Emery. So he's obviously a key player for us in that regard of what we're trying to achieve. But I think looking at it, we do have a young defensive midfielder who could come in and take his place in Torreira. I don't think he's ready to take over that kind of 35, 40 plus games a season, just a case of rotating between the two of them. And with Europa League coming up now, I think it's a time for us to experiment with that position. I think it's an upside of the draw we got being slightly more testing than previous groups. I don't see anyone in that lineup that we've got for Europa League that we're going to be putting five or six past compared to other seasons. So this will mean we've got an opportunity to try out people in that position, because I think that's one of the issues that we know Xhaka, or we can say Xhaka isn't great in that position, but we haven't tried anyone else. So we don't know if he's the best of a bad bunch in that kind of regard. And until we've got someone who can, until we've seen proof as fans, not just proof in training, you know, Emery and Casino and even Wenger we're seeing in that regard, it's going to go on and on. I would happily drive him out here, but we need a replacement for him. And I'd rather see some proof of it rather than putting hope into someone like Torreira.
Caught me unawares there. Yeah, no, I agree with it. That's right. I agree with a lot of what you're saying there. It's all very well saying we shouldn't be playing or we should look for a replacement, but until that situation arises, we're kind of stuck with him at the moment. Where do you sit on it, Danny? You've, throughout your 85 years of life, you've watched a lot of teams, or a lot of players, I should say, in teams for Arsenal, from the days of the David Hilliers to the Perry Groveses, who also have done a very good interview on Football Ramble. If you haven't listened to that, do give it a listen. It's good fun. But there's been to the Ray Parlors, to the culture of Gilberto Silva, to the Patrick Vieiras. There's so many different types of midfielders. For me, Xhaka is just one of those. He doesn't really fit into any of those boxes because he's not a bad footballer. But he has so many bad qualities. It's such a strange one. Where do you sit in terms of your past and present on Xhaka? What's your kind of thoughts on him?
I've got this analogy in my head and it's banging to get out. You know, when you go to the fun fair and you've got that strength thing, we get the big hammer and you whack it and it goes all the way to the top. You get to the top, you're a strong man. That's my Vieira, straight to the top. Xhaka only gets it three quarters of the way at his strongest, maybe halfway, and some of those other players. So no matter how hard they, like Theo Walcott, occasionally nearly to the top, most of the time about halfway. Doesn't have the brain of a footballer, is what people used to say about Walcott. And I have an, I would guess that occasionally Xhaka is, he's either seeing someone in the crowd that he wants to murder because he looks like a murderer, and that's why no one's saying him. That's probably why he's still playing. No one's got the nerve to say to him, oi, stop doing that. Hasn't it been since he's been in, playing in the Premier League, he has given away more penalties than any other player with five Premier League penalties given away. And you're thinking, why are you doing that? You like you were saying, all his history, is really good. And I think part of it could be we play three in the central midfield, one behind the front, the central defenders. You can't put Xhaka there. You put him there, he's going to cause issues. And on Sunday, he was there. Torreira was out to the right. And Guendouzi was the wasp in a jam jar doing everything, which is magnificent to see. I don't know why Emery keeps doing that to him, because that's not his position. We all said last season, that's not his position. Season before that, we need to get in someone who is going to be a Conte playing in front of the back two. And that's what Torreira does. And Torreira hasn't been playing there. And the more you stick Emery up, might as well stick Xhaka up front and go, why isn't he scoring goals? Why isn't he doing the job? That's not what he does. His job is to break stuff down, pass the ball to someone else who knows what to do with it. Torreira's a more accomplished player where he can play anywhere in the middle, which it looks like he can do. But I don't want to see Torreira out on the right or the left. I don't want to see Ceballos out on the right or left. I want the proper players to play in the proper positions. But like someone said when I was moaning about Xhaka before, I said, I doubt very much Xhaka is doing these kind of things because he fancies it. Emery's probably telling him to do it. And when you come to that point, you go, well, maybe it's Emery's fault. Makes me happy inside that Dave is nodding at some of that. I think I've accomplished something in life.
I mean, I largely agree with a lot of what you said there. Even the analogy, yeah. I want to get your thoughts as well on this one, Dave, because what's, again, from somebody who's going to a lot of particularly the home games, what's the general consensus? Because I listen to a lot of podcasts and I listen to a lot of people who know a lot about Arsenal, a lot of people who really don't know a lot about Arsenal. The general consensus is that the fan base is divided on Xhaka. I'm not sure I see it that way. I feel like a lot more now are going down that line of actually not so sure. What was your general take on being in the game, and what was the reaction? I'm dying to know what the reaction around you was as he went tumbling into that tackle, would be a strong way of putting it. Assault would be a better word. Oh, you're muted. You're muted, Dave. You're muted.
No, I'm not.
Ah, there you go. It was all just a trick of camera, boys and girls.
We get carried away with the importance of podcasts and blogs and things. Quite clearly on Sunday, the moment he made that tackle, tackle in inverted commas, I headed for the bar because I didn't want to watch the penalty. And the reaction amongst all of the people around me was not necessarily complimentary to him. So he has, yes, there are a lot of people who now think he cost us a Champions League place last season. There was certainly one he gave away. Was it Brighton? Did he give another one away against Palace?
Palace, yeah.
I think there were a couple he gave away.
The penalty at Palace, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, but for which we would have been in the Champions League this season. And you can't be that reckless in your own box. And people are now starting to relate him with that and starting to turn on him. But you know what the Arsenal fans are like. They've always got to have a scapegoat. Me, it's not just his tackling in the box I'm not overly keen on. It's when he starts spraying these balls across the field from like 18 yards out that have no chance of hitting their target and get picked off by the opposition. So there's more than one issue with him. He's a good player at times. Like Danny said, I think that was great. When he hits that hammer, that ball doesn't hit the bell.
Yeah, well said. I feel like him and Mesut Ozil are in are in a similar box. And what I mean by that is I feel like if we'd have signed those two players for the game that was in the early 2000s or back into the 90s, we'd have had two wonderful players we'd have all been waxing lyrical about. But I feel like now the game and the way the game is maybe moving on and bypassing those two types of players. But we shall see. One player that the game is not bypassing at the moment, Josh, is the new French international, Matteo Guendouzi. And at the risk of sort of being too biased, I'm going to give this one to you instead. He, for me, is a player who is really stepping up this season to the point where I think he's actually potentially leapfrogging Torreira as well in Emery's thinking. He's clearly got a lot of trust from the manager. I think the fans love the fact that there's a bit of Flamini about him, but a bit more of a footballer. No offence, Matthew, but I think Matteo has that little bit more about him. What's his ceiling?
Oh,
is he a player that possibly leaps to Barcelona in 6 months? Or
it's one of those. He is certainly progressing a lot quicker than I think anyone has expected in their wildest dreams. I think he's still a little away from where he could be, certainly like that Barcelona level. I think he'd be... It's one of those, if he keeps consistently putting balls into the box like he did for the Aubameyang goal, then absolutely, then he can absolutely continue up on his trajectory. But until that point, what we've still got is fundamentally a raw 21-year-old in our midfield. And he's had exactly the same seasons he had last season, where he came in, hit the ground running and looked superb for us. But we all saw what happened in the latter stages of last season. And the boy does need to come in and out of this side, I think. Not in case of he needs to be dropped, but he played, 40-plus games last season? And at 19 years of age, he certainly needs to get a rest between those. And I think the progression of Chris Willock will actually help him no end, because we've got a player of a similar kind of attributes as him that can come in and out. Joe Willock. That's the only one left, isn't it?
Yes, I'm going to say.
Joe Willock can come in and out for him. And I think that's the real key, is we've got depth in his position, so we're not ultra reliant on him. But as you say, Chris, his call up to the national side, albeit on a... suspicious injury, should we say, to the Man United players, because he's not the only United player that has dropped out from international duty this week. Ollie really bringing back the Fergie era in some ways off the field. But he absolutely deserves it for the first four games he's had this season. And yeah, long may it continue. I'm not going to say a player shouldn't, I wish them to fail. I wouldn't be a supporter of a football club if I wanted him to not progress for us. But I think the speed he's going at needs a little bit of caveating that, he is still young and raw, and he's not going to be putting in 10 out of 10 performances consistently for the next 15 games or so.
Can I just say something on the Willocks that I find amazing? Well, all three of the Willocks, the Joe, Matt and Chris, were all at Arsenal to start with. And then Matt Willock went off to Man United. And then we thought, he's doing well there. He's had five loan spells, released by Man United, now playing for Gillingham. And Willock, the elder, the Chris Willock, he left us and went to, I always say Benfica, because it's probably Porto.
It was Benfica.
No, he was at Benfica. Isn't he Benfica. Now at West Brom?
He's at West Brom, kicking his heels, not even getting a game, with Sami Ajayi, Kyle Bartley and Kieran Gibbs, all at West Brom. And you think, maybe those two went for the bright lights of Man United in Portugal, and the one who stayed at Arsenal, did the job, worked hard, didn't complain. Now look, starting Premier League games for the best team in the world.
Sliding doors. And dear listeners, if you suffer from the Willocks, you can get some cream for that. So that's good to know. It is a little bit one of those, isn't it? Sliding doors moments if a player sticks around or doesn't. But good to see that Joe Willock's doing a good job, as is Ainsley Maitland-Niles, a little word for him. We all know he's not a right back technically, but he's doing a fine job in that position. One other thing I wanted to touch on, Danny, before we kind of move away from North London Derby a little bit is, I will get Dave's thoughts on this as well, but just yours first of all, what's your thoughts on this front three? Because my biggest concern with it is how we're going to get the best out of Aubameyang and Lacazette, because for me, neither are droppable. Pepe, for me, should be playing because he gives us that little X factor, that little something different. But the one thing I noticed on Sunday, was when Aubameyang was moved through the middle, he instantly became a lot more of a threat. But not just that, his link-up with Lacazette showed, and it wasn't always direct link-up between the two, but the runs Lacazette makes opens those spaces for Aubameyang to come into. What would be your sort of system? How would you be thinking about setting this up? Would you almost be looking at giving Pepe a free 10 role in behind the two, or would you almost say to all three of them, look, as long as one of you's in the box at all times, it doesn't really matter?
I think that's the way it's going to go. But a couple of times in recent shows, I've compared us to the Liverpool front three. Mane on the left, he's a striker, further forward. Salah on the right, further forward, he is now a striker, although in his Basel, Chelsea, and was it Fiorentina or whichever one it was, he was mainly a winger, but then Klopp using that. And the only striker they've got, I mean, then, and Firmino, they say he plays in the middle. He's not, he's a 10, but he plays further back. So they've got two out wide and one a little bit further back. When you look at our one, you've got Lacazette, who is a striker, playing forward, Aubameyang, striker, playing on the left, and Pepe, winger, playing on the right. I think at times it can be a little bit confusing, but I think the one saving grace we have got, Aubameyang, right-footed playing on the left, Pepe, left-footed playing on the right, they swap round easily. And when they swap round, rather than having to do Robin and cutting in to do stuff, they just keep on going around the outside. So I think they can bring so much stress and disorder to a defensive team when they're going, right, you go and do him, you know he's going to cut in. And then he doesn't cut in. You think, well, why isn't he cutting in? And then, like you were saying, Pepe can drop down into the 10 because he's creative at his team last season. Didn't he get 11 assists or some number like that? And then you can...
I think it's 17, wasn't it? 11 goals, 17 assists? Anyway, it was a lot.
I didn't see a single guy. I didn't even know he existed until you started going on about him before we signed him like you usually do.
You aren't alone.
Yeah, and then like you were saying, it's good because in the Aubameyang and Lacazette can pull in. And then we're playing a two up front with a one behind. So there's so much fluidity and flexibility about the entire team, which I don't think what Liverpool have got that, unless you want to move Salah and play him up front or Mane out front. And then I don't think either of them are going to be wanting those two, are going to be wanting to play in the slightly deeper role. But Lacazette is, if you've seen from Lacazette, is more than happy to drop down into a kind of Bergkamp role where you're a striker and, well, a forward role, isn't it? And the others can tuck in, they can change sides, like in the days of Ljungberg and Perez. Perez was played on the left, but he was right-footed, and quite often he would go over to the right-hand side and change the dynamics of the game, the structure, the shape of the game. And I think that is when once that starts to gel, people are going to go, like in the old days when you had Henry and Bergkamp and Wiltord at the time, you're going, whichever one of these I mark, the other two are going to go and do something. So unless you start sticking, if you stick two men on any one of those, that means the other two are going, hey, we've got one man sharing between the two of us, which is John's usual weekends.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Another one of John's autobiographies coming soon to all crap bookshops near you. Four men don't know where to play them. Dave, just on that same subject, what was your observation seeing it live in terms of how they set up originally and how it changed when Lacazette came on? And additional question to that, do you see any future for a certain Fortnite-loving number 10 who's sitting on the bench at the moment? Because I don't see where Mesut gets in at the moment, or do you see it from the other side and think actually he's that missing ingredient to play behind those three?
The latter partially, because it was a big disappointment to see our midfield trio were a three that I and who the hell am I would only have picked two of, because I would have gone 4-2-1-3. So that you had either Mesut or Ceballos, and Ceballos would probably be the form pick at the moment, but Mesut's time will come, because we didn't have anybody to feed that front three. And it was very frustrating, very, very frustrating. And we didn't need three in midfield because Tottenham weren't operating that well either. Tottenham had Son playing well. Eriksen was half decent. The rest of them, you might as well have thrown them in a skip. And we missed a big, big opportunity to put them in their place because we didn't have the creative midfielder to set up the front three. That's my view.
Dave, would you say in Ozil's six seasons at Arsenal, never has he had an opportunity for so many of his creativity to come to fruition? Because when it was Giroud, as much as we love all hail Giroud, the beautifulest man with the wonderfulest beard, six shots to get one on target. Ozil must have been, apart from the Sanchez time, he had one player. Now, you stick him behind those three, he can go wherever he wants. He can pull out the passes, and we just hope that, I hope that he is in the right mental state to go, wow, this is my opportunity to show idiots like me to shut up and just watch his magic feet, because when he wants to, he can be the most creative player in the Premier League, maybe even in any football.
You just said the magic words, in his mental state. I think last season, mentally, after the World Cup, after the criticism he took in Germany, after his obvious falling out with Unai Emery, I don't think he was in a good place. And yet the players in the squad absolutely adore him. And so I think we might yet get the best out of him this season. But it won't be any time soon, because what's gone on with the attempted carjacking, with his wife going back to Germany, it's an unsettling time for him. So I would give him all the time in the world. If he doesn't come back, then at the end of the season, can we find someone who's going to take him on board for part of his wages? But that's a long way in the future. I still think there's a player in there, but I also think there's a player in Ceballos, and I would certainly use one or other of them, mate.
You get the feeling it's a bit of a make or break 6 to 12 months for Mesut.
Yeah.
In terms of an Arsenal future anyway, because it's almost like he's escaped the cull this summer. I'm not sure he'll escape another one if he doesn't produce what we know he can. I think that's the frustration. We know there's a player, like you said, Dave, we know there's a player there. You don't just become crap overnight, but people also have to remember there's a lot goes on off the pitch as well. So, let's hope we get the best out of him. Danny. I don't know if you've got the stats lined up there, but I'll try and buy you some time if you don't. We said goodbye to two more players this week. I can talk really slowly if you want, or you can just preempt me here. But we said goodbye to Henrik Mkhitaryan, at least for the time being, or seemingly probably for good, whether that be with Roma, who he's gone on loan to, or with somebody else at the end of the season. And we also said goodbye to everyone's favourite orange juggling Spaniard, little Nacho Monreal, who, must admit, I had a little wobbly lip when I read his Instagram goodbye to us. I thought that was very sweet. I'll get Josh's thoughts, actually, just quickly, while you pull up some stats, and then I'll get your view as well. So, Josh, I'll come to you first of all. Where do you sit in terms of these two players going out? Because Mkhitaryan's taken an awful lot of stick, and Nacho seemingly goes with everyone's best wishes, but some people are scratching their heads as to why. We know now it's family reasons. What's your feelings on both players and whether you think we've got enough to cover the loss of both of those at this stage?
Yeah, I think, a season or two away from Santi Cazorla was a bit too much for him to really deal with in Nacho Monreal, but then wanted to return to Spain. And fair play to him. He's a fantastic servant for the club. One of the five captains that we had last season as well, which was an interesting one. When Emery was talking about, his five captains for this season, he was always mentioning that, he hadn't settled them yet until this transfer window had closed. So that was obviously a sign that Nacho was potentially on his way out. I think there's the timing of when he came out versus when, the North London derby occurred. He was at the game, so, there is the thought of whether or not he should have played. I know we discussed it on the show, but a quick cover. I think the fact that we didn't lose it, it would have been made. If we did lose it, it would have been made a bigger deal of. I still think Kolasinac is awful on the flip side. But, Nacho wanted to go, and he goes with our kind of blessing. And we've got Kieran Tierney, who is 2 weeks away from training? Like full training?
Well, so he's an Arsenal player, so he's 2 weeks away from an ACL probably.
Yeah. But yeah, from the latest reports, it's 2 weeks away from full training. And then from there, I imagine we'll see him in kind of October time. So it makes sense we kind of get rid of someone, let someone go out now. And yeah, just I think when it was kind of announced he was going, I just spent my time watching that orange video with him just flicking up into his fridge, because that's my favourite Nacho moment. That was right-footed volley against Man City. It's one of the two.
Quick fun fact for you. Took me 73 attempts to even get an orange into the fridge, not even into the drawer from the floor.
I thought it was just to get an orange, to be fair, on your boat, you scurvy rat.
I sat there 3 days and in the end I had to get Sean to come pick it up off my shoe and put it out there for me.
That's just because you're lazy.
So a question for all of you. Start with you, Chris, because you've not had any questions yet. Rank your top four Arsenal left backs in living memory. Ollie can go a little bit further back because he's wise.
Well, Ashley Cole is
his ability, not because, yeah.
Yeah, but Ashley Cole is by far and away the best and probably one of the best in this country's ever seen. You know, that... do you know, he's a weird one, Ashley Cole, just a quick aside. You always get the feeling that he almost sort of wants to make peace with Arsenal fans nowadays. You can almost sort of see when he's not the greatest pundit in the world, he's not the greatest talker in the world, but you can almost see him, you can kind of see the regret when he talks, thinking, I really should have just kept my mouth shut.
You know why, Chris? It's because he's not a legend at Arsenal and he's not a legend at Chelsea.
No, that's true. Yeah,
much like Henry isn't a legend of Barcelona and no one gives a shit about Vieira in Italy.
Weird, isn't it? But yeah, on ability alone, he was for me the best I've seen. Nigel Winterburn wasn't far behind him. You know, I think he's a very... People look at Nutty and in the long term, and I think they forget how good a fullback he was, and the fact that he along with three of his colleagues got a rebirth under Arsene's reign when he first came in. So I don't think there's a lot between those two. And yet, without having every single left back that I've seen in my lifetime, David Grondin aside, in my memory, I think Nacho's probably the third one. I can't think. Bakary Sani was a right back. Laurent was a right back.
You can hear David itching to say something.
Yeah. Silvino, I mean, this is in my life, you know, my sort of adult lifetime. Silvino was a good left back, but far better as an offensive force than a defensive one. Andre Santos. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of, I think you'd be going back before my time, and I'll let Dave, I'm sure Dave, I know exactly who Dave's going to pick here. But yeah, before my time, I think those three are the three that I would pick out as being my top three. What were yours, Dave, out of interest?
Top three would be really difficult and it would be unfair for me to separate them. But to add to your list, I have to say Bob McNabb, because he was just awesome in that 1971 double side. And I actually wasn't too disfond, if that's a word, of his predecessor, Billy McCulloch, although we were defensively atrocious in his time. But he was, you know, he was a fabulous, he gave 100% in every game. But no, he wouldn't make the top three or four, Billy, bless him. But yeah, Bob McNabb, he probably is in the top three or four.
Good shout. Yeah. Anybody else from the 80s era, Danny, that you'd want to give a shout to?
For me, top three is Ashley Cole, Kenny Sampson, Nigel Winterburn. I said top Kenny, four because for me, Nacho Kenny, is.
Kenny was the other one that I had in mind. Yeah. Slightly, you know, I remember him playing, but it would be unfair for me to say, oh, yeah, I remember him when I was three, because I don't. But I obviously know enough about my history to know he was good.
Apologies. I didn't know you hadn't mentioned him.
Yeah, he's the one. How is he these days? Is he, because I know he went through some tough times, didn't he? Is he on the mend these days?
I haven't seen him for a while. I saw him a couple of years ago and he was okay, but it's always, you know,
yeah,
he's veering between there and there.
Yeah, never quite know. Well, I'll turn the question back on you then, Danny, because we haven't covered the Mickey in the room yet, so we'll do that now. Yeah, I'm coming back to Josh because you rudely talk straight over the top of him. So I'm going to give you the limelight first of all, and then I'll let Josh have his say. Where you've got some fairly strong views, haven't you, on Mkhitaryan? You're not a fan, really, are you?
In the Dortmund days, you stick on that yellow shirt, that man was a legend. And what he did for Armenia, in fact, he won Armenian player so many years in a row, he said, "I don't want to be considered for it anymore." I'm sure I read that somewhere. When he went to Man United, I thought he's going to look good, like Gundogan, another one. We went to Man City, another Dortmund legend of the Klopp days and before that. And when he came to us, I thought, well, it depends where you're going to play him, because when he made his name at Dortmund, he wasn't playing out on the right. And when players get older, they tend to not do the hard parts. Like, you're never going to see a 17-year-old Theo Walcott playing in central midfield or playing back a little bit. But Walcott, the older you get, I mean, look at Ruud Gullit, forward, creative midfielder, defender, sweeper, moved all the way back. And so Mkhitaryan could go, yeah, I can't play front. Well, you want to play me on the wings? I'm nearly fucking 50. I'm so small there. I'm nearly 50. What are you on about? He never really got a chance to play in the 10, which is what he made his name for at Dortmund. And the creativity, always playing Mert Ozil there. And you think, but then I thought, well, that game against Everton, where he came on and did he get a goal and three assists, or he was magnificent. And we thought, up your bum, Man United. We've got a magnificent player off you, but his stats didn't do it. I mean, you look at his stats, they weren't that bad. I think he averaged a goal every five games, but he never really, you know, like when you tell a child to go and tidy their room and they tidy the room and they're never really into it. He never really seemed like he was into it. He came on, and when you're a player and you're on that amount of money and you're that high profile and you only ever get games coming on as a substitute with 20 minutes to go, you know, your time's kind of numbered. It's very sad. And I think he'll do well playing for Roma. And if he ends up going back to Germany, I think he'll do well. But he'll look back at his time at Arsenal, Man United in England and go,
Josh, where do you sit on it? Is it a case of right player, maybe wrong time, wrong style of manager, wrong team, wrong fit?
Good question. I think maybe if Wenger had had him earlier in his reign, we might have been able to resurrect his career from United. I think certainly that kind of Mourinho was it Van Gaal he came in under? Certainly under Mourinho. Didn't really help his kind of game. I think, you know, because how Arsenal was with those kind of, playmakers, I was going to say kind of like flair, but there's not a huge amount of flair to Mkhitaryan's game. But you know what I kind of mean? Those kind of players, you know, Arsenal absolutely loved, and I feel like he would have been able to resurrect his career better. I think he was an upgrade on what we were getting from Alexis, who we sent there. The guy, although what Mkhitaryan may have not given us as a player, certainly getting that kind of toxicity out of the club, I think was what was needed at the time. And if we don't see it as necessarily what we got off the field or on the field was an advantage for us, I think we really needed to get Alexis out of the club at that point. And it's a sad thing that that's the biggest thing that Mkhitaryan has brought to the club, was the fact of what he facilitated for us. But in the same instance, he gave us a bit more balance. I think when we saw him come in initially, and Danny talked about his debut against Everton, absolutely fantastic. And I think for that half of the season, it was something we needed, with Aubameyang coming in as well. I don't think Aubameyang would have settled as quickly into the side without Mkhitaryan there. You know, his mate from Dortmund, who that link up really helped him, I think, settle and get the goals in early and really get his Arsenal career off to the absolute flyer that it still is, really. So I do see the upsides of Mkhitaryan, but he has been a bit of a, you know, Andre Arshavin. We can go through that kind of mid-era, or I certainly can go through the mid-era, which, if you want me to go through my top three left-backs, they are more or less bookended by Monreal and Ashley Cole. And it's just a name of, can you remember who played at left-back for us during the mid-2000s? And I might bring out Armand Traoré as one of them. Yeah. And he's probably not getting in our top three of anything.
Gio Van Bronckhorst as well for a few years.
Gavin Hoyt for the Legends. I think he played left back for them. But yes, in terms of Mkhitaryan, I think it was great to see him come in. I think he was always a player that could have done something for us. But I think he came, when he came in, it was underwhelming. And when he'll leave, he was underwhelming. And his whole career has been underwhelming for us, I think.
Yeah, I Andreas Javin is a really good comparison, actually, I think, if you look at the trajectory of their careers.
So, Chris, because we didn't cover this on the live show as well, what were your thoughts now in full 2020 hindsight of Mkhitaryan coming on for the game rather than a Reece Nelson?
I think less Nelson, more Ozil for me was the one. I can see why you wouldn't throw Nelson in, because to me, Nelson is still very much finding his feet in this squad setup. I can sort of see why he wasn't thrown in, but the creativity side we were clearly lacking. I think Ozil would have been the one. It's such a weird one, because they clearly didn't play Monreal because that deal had been agreed, and they, you know, he obviously wanted to move before the North London derby, where we could have kept hold of him had we wanted to. It almost strikes me as that, and I know a lot of quite high profile pundits have said, no, there's no way that deal came out of nowhere. You know, the manager would have been aware of it the day before and it would have all been arranged. I'm not so sure. I'm really not. It strikes me as a deal that maybe we discussed earlier in the summer. Nothing came of it. And then at the last minute, Roman went, oh, do you know what? Actually, we will. And we went, oh, okay, why not? Because I just can't see how you would have risked it otherwise. I know we've done it before with Oxlade-Chamberlain, but I just don't. I don't know. And he had a nightmare, didn't he, as well?
Yeah, the only thing I would say maybe, and this goes back into the conversation about left backs I've seen in my time, Mkhitaryan played left back for us for a couple of games.
He did, yeah.
And maybe that was one of the things, that having that some form of weird cover for him, which is what I thought when he, after he came on, and with the hindsight of him then going again, was because of the issues Kolasinac was having on that wing, that we needed someone defensively minded, or more defensively minded than the options that were else available on the bench to us.
So it's a funny one as well, though, isn't it? Because if he'd have come on and played brilliantly for 20 minutes, we'd have won the game. I don't think many people would have been quite as scathing as they were. The fact is, he came on and had a bit of a stinker, didn't he? And maybe that was what maybe made the final nail go in the coffin, potentially. But I think it's a shame, because much like Meza, I still think there's a player in there. But sometimes a player just doesn't fit a club, and Alexis and Mkhitaryan's careers sort of went a bit wonky as soon as they took that move. A lot of people, by the way, have said, is it the worst swap in Arsenal history? I'll just say two words to you, William Gallas. Just do a bit of Googling on that, boys and girls. That was far worse, by the way. Right, let's, before we take some listener questions, let's say hello to some people, shall we? See who's in the chat box. 76 of you at the moment, so hello to you all. I'm not going to name you all, but just glancing down the list, we got Loki, Cactus Jack, who came out with a perlo, who said, I would rate Kenny Sampson, but he ate all my caramel cups from my quality street. Tin went off him since then. Love that. Don One, Archie, K-Man, Loki, Took a Mania, Grant Wilborn, TN Sanchez, Matthew Hudson, the McManus, hello, sir. Archie, Rich Morris, Rudy Rastos, Freddo. Oh, there's lots of you. Lots of you. Good evening, good morning, or good night, wherever you are, to you all. Thank you for tuning in. As we always say on this podcast, without you guys and girls, we'd be literally nothing. I mean, we'd literally be just Danny sat there playing with his... Actually, let's not go there. But yeah, thank you for tuning in as always. I'm not going to be all aggressive like Jace. I'm just simply going to ask you very politely, if you do enjoy what we're doing, if you just want to click the old thumbs up down below on the thumbs up icon, just to say you like us, that would be great. And please feel free to leave us a comment as well. Danny goes through them all individually, don't you, Danny? after every show, and he replies to a few of them. It's always nice to hear what you like, maybe what you don't like. Feedback is always good. So ping us that. And if you're not already, or if you haven't already, click the old bell notification so that you will always know when we go live. We go live after every Arsenal game, or men's game, I should say. And we also have the podcast once a week. So if you like what we do, click subscribe, click the bell icon, and hit your old thumbs up. Thank you very much. Right, Danny, I'm handing all the control over to you. We're on time. We're doing well. Listener question.
Really good. Let's not ruin this by me talking about amusement parks and pigeons. Right, first question for you, Mr. Hollick, from our friend Richard Cactus Cash, who donated to you, Chris.
Yes. Thank you, Cactus. Much appreciated, sir.
He says, what one thing makes you most proud to support the Arsenal? And people, if you like that question, which you will a few times this season, if he ever answers WhatsApp.
Okay. One thing that makes me proud to support the Arsenal, there's a zillion of them. I love everything about the club. I just, one thing. Just the class, the way that they operate, the way that they have provided us with entertainment down the years, the way that they just produce football that we like to watch. There is no one thing, but it's a great question. Thank you, Cactus.
Chris, Josh, just nod if you'd like to answer. I'll Chris you next, then Josh.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly what Dave said, something I've always loved about being an Arsenal fan is the way we do things. And there's a lot of the whole the Arsenal way, and you know, a lot of people say like the West Ham way and all of that, and the Chelsea, well, maybe not that. But there's a lot of clubs that have their own ways, their own identities. I really like the fact that we're a traditional, classy club. And I know I've plugged it already, but I'd highly recommend, even if you're not a massive fan of Football Ramble, and you know, I quite like their stuff. If you listen to the Ramble Meets, I think it's released on Wednesday. Jim Campbell chats to Perry Groves, and he talks about the story of how his father was a massive Arsenal fan, and he talks about the day that his dad, he was playing at Colchester, I believe, at the time, and his dad said, "We've got you a trial at Arsenal. When we get there, you know, make sure you present yourself correctly." And he tells a story about the old boy who used to stand on the door at Marble Halls. Dave, helped me out with the name. I can't for the life remember the guy's name. But the old gent who used to stand and essentially stand in the doorway of the Marble Halls. And he said he knew Perry Groves, or he said, "Good afternoon, Mr. Groves." And so Perry knew that's when he knew Arsenal was, he was at the club of his heart, that they knew his name. And he said it was so classy. And then he said that he went in to meet George Graham for the first time, massive oak door in Highbury. And George was sat there in a huge throne like seat. And he said that he made Perry sit on a milking stool so that George could feel bigger than him, because that's the sort of guy he was. And just those sort of stories. I know, I'm sure hundreds of clubs all around the world have got stories similar, but we've always done things the right way. I love what we do in the community. I love the fact we do the day's donation of the wages every season. I know it's a lot of people say, "Oh yeah, but there's nurses and doctors and all this, and you know, they should get more pay." Yeah, they should. You're right. But at least we do something. At least we make the gesture. The way the players conduct themselves off the pitch on the whole has been brilliant. And you rarely hear of a player leaving Arsenal talking bad, or you know, bad off the club. Very, very rarely do you hear that. You might hear them say, "Oh, you know, I didn't get the game time," or "I felt I needed a new challenge." But you never really hear anybody say anything damaging about the club. And it's another reason why I really, really hope that what Josh Kroenke came out with in his statement is true. I really do, because we all as Arsenal fans want that legacy to continue. We want the right kind of ownership, the right type of ownership, and somebody who wants to take on this club as the club it is, not disassemble it and start it in a franchised, you know, soulless image. We want this club to be as it is. So, yeah, for me, everything about what makes the club. Sorry, that's a bit of a waffling answer, but it's a great question. It deserves the time I've given it. So what do you think, Josh?
Oh, I was going to say I think the aura, so it's similar to yours. Everything that's untangible about Arsenal. It's that thing, you know, there's something, it's more than just a football club in that regard. It's so much more than that. As you say, I'm sure you find any, you pluck any fan from any club and they'll say similar things to what we're saying. But this is like personal for us. And yeah, I think it's that thing of the way it kind of steers your life as well. And I think from supporting Arsenal, it has made me a better person rather than maybe supporting other clubs. But it's that kind of, it's that classiness. I think what certainly helped in that regard was coming into supporting Arsenal was Arsene Wenger being there at the time as well. I think the values, he personified Arsenal so well. It, you can kind of see Arsenal as this, you know, big club, I suppose, big intangible object. And we've always had, or certainly I've always seen that kind of, you know, it's like having the image of God and then having somebody embody that. And I think having Arsene Wenger at the time, he embodied Arsenal, he embodied the Arsenal values and made it a lot more, a lot easier, a lot more accessible for you to understand those kind of things at that time. I don't know if anyone else at, during your era of getting in, who that kind of figure was for you, but I think it certainly helped get them in. Danny, who was, did you have that kind of figure who was at the club that helped you do that? I think it might depend on how you got into the club, because I didn't do it through family. It was on my own back that I came into Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm not sure what one thing made me reignite, apart from the Panini football stickers, but my mum told me I supported Arsenal because she bought the kits. We all know about that. But thinking back, the one thing that I really, really liked was the romance, the relationship Arsenal had with their young players, Rocastle, Thomas, Davis, Caesar, Groves, and Groves came from Colchester, but Tony Adams, Keogh, and all of that, Longolism. You could 30, 40, 50 of them, Campbell, that have all come through. And then they've been at the club since they were a kid, working their way through the Overton combination and then the reserves and all that lot, and then making their way in League Cup games and getting their way through. It made you think, God, yeah, they've been at the club. They're proper Arsenal fans. They've worked hard to get where they are. And that had gone, because in the end of the Wenger era, we had three phases. I won't go through them all. And it was sweeping up all the best players around Europe. And as other teams started to catch on to doing that, we ended up getting the dregs of some of the players that we picked up were absolutely junk. And now seeing that someone made a decision to go, right, we are going to get local boys, local youth, we're going to bring them through, play the same type of football all the way through. And that love affair that the players will have with the club, like there's that young, the Scottish one who's just been let go and he went to Norwich, whose name I can't remember. He played a couple of games last season in the Europa League for us. Oh, bloody hell, he follows me.
Charlie Gilmore.
That's not from Brighton. No. Anyway, I can't remember his name. Never mind. He was saying that when he left the club, because there's a bloke who I follow, James. He's based in Holland, and he did an interview with him, and he was saying that he loved the way the Arsenal worked. This is the, and I suppose the George Graham days of everybody wore a suit and tie. That pride you'd have in the club, and knowing all of the, half of those players that played there, they all come through the academy. And you look at our under 23 games now, and they're nearly all British. Nothing against foreign players, but if you come through the club from the age 7, 8, 9, 10, that club is in you and you want to stay at that club, unless you're a money grabbing shitbag and they can bugger off anyway. But that seems to be back all the way through the under 18s, under 23s, and now the bench, and the bench is working its way through to the first team. All these young players who represent us as British people who live in this country, and even represent other players. Like I remember when Danny Carbassian came through, I thought, well, that's brilliant for the American fans. They've got an American coming through. And just all that kind of stuff makes you just love the club and think that's a really good thing they like to do. Unlike Chelsea, you get a load of players in and farm them all out and get a massive loan fees and flog them on after. So
the biggest thing I noticed about the impact, and again, I'm sure other clubs could say the same, but as long as I live, I will never forget the eyes on our very own Mr. Jeff Holofrand when he first rocked up at the Emirates that day. His face lit up like a picture, and sometimes a club you can't make that, you know, you can't create that. you either, and that's coming from across the other side of the world and just being part of that atmosphere and that. And I remember him just saying, like, just sitting there, just with this gleam in his face, just like thinking this is amazing. Like, and there's a brilliant, if you watch Fever Pitch, we all have done that shot that was brilliantly cast when the young lad walks up and he first walks up the steps and looks out onto the Highbury pitch. And I remember doing that as a boy myself, and it all coming back, and you just get that there's a soul about Arsenal, whatever ground, you know, we play at, whether that be at Emirates or at Highbury, and it just gets you. But I think it's something that us as fans are the only ones that really understand that. Go on, Dave.
Absolutely, Chris. I was just going to say that it is the only love affair that has lasted all of my life and will last all of my life.
Yeah, perfectly said. Perfectly said, yeah. Just for those interested, if you...
I've clicked on... Oh, sorry, Chris. Yeah, I was saying Dave's love of music is well known, because late night YouTube links, many a time I've clicked on a bit of Chaka Khan.
Well, for those of you that were interested, by the way, in that interview, I've just posted the link into the chat box. I'm sure Danny can fudge it into the description of this podcast as well, if you want to watch that. So, great question. That's almost taken us off on a podcast on its own. But Danny, I feel we should move on. So, what else have we got in the mailbag?
Questions, yes. People, if you hear us talking over each other, sometimes this beta software, we didn't used to do it. It's a bit of an issue, and hopefully they'll sort it out. But there's a slight delay. You don't see it, but there's a slight delay with Chris for us at the moment. I don't know why that is. I noticed that Mike and Andy had it, and a few other pods have had a slight delay. I know Craig had it with the judge, and it's just something they're working through. Anyway, question for you, Chris, from Carl. If Arsenal had won the North London Derby, would Ellis still be a knob?
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, question for you, Josh, from Kyle, Undestructible Cake. We weren't even following him on the podcast account. How did that happen? Everybody knows Destructible or Undestructible Cake. We fixed that. He says, right, he's listed all the games we've got coming up. So how many points are we getting from the next 12 games? I'll say these slowly, Josh. Just add up 0, 1 or 3 in your head.
Danny, it's all right. I pre-read it.
You.
And the correct answer anyway, I'd have done 12 times 3. 36.
Yeah. There you go. Destructible Cake got a question read out in the Arsenal cast the other day. He's famous. Yeah.
Oh.
So the answer is, I agree with you there. I think every single Watford, Villa, Man United, Bournemouth, Sheffield United, Crystal Palace, Wolves, Leicester, Southampton, Norwich, Brighton, West Ham. The only tough one there for me is Leicester. I would have said Wolves, but Wolves have already shown they're either brilliant or they're terrible. And Man United.
I get worried when people say the only tough one. Yeah. Like the only tough one was at home to Crystal Palace and at home to Brighton in the run-in, yeah?
Oh, and then we
let's not get ahead of ourselves. We can say that they're winnable games in there, but let's not. Yeah.
I'll try to give you a better one from Richard again. Should we field the kids in the Europa League or a senior team? I think it means in the group stages for starters.
I would put a mix of players in, really. I'd be interested to see who starts up front, to be honest. It's our second game back for the international break, is away to Eintracht, because you've already said I'm not allowed to say things that would jinx us. Let's just say the front three of last season at Eintracht have been sold or have moved on. So they're a slightly different side to the one that we would have seen in the semi-finals last season. But who starts up front for that would be interesting. I think for defence, we might see the return of Mustafi. Sorry. under my breath. I'm not sure what I said there. But at some point, I think it'll be something like Chambers and Holding come in, and it'll be a side of that kind of quality. So not necessarily the kids, but kind of that squad rotation players will come in. And I think with the players that we've seen go out from us, especially on deadline day, what we've seen is, 25 players left over the summer. We look like we've cleared the pathway for the youngsters to come through. It was Kelechi left as well on deadline day, didn't he? So we've properly, as well as the likes of Bielik and Gilmore and Nketiah's gone out on loan, there is a proper pathway. especially with Freddie coming in as well, to get these players into the first team. And I think we'll see a mix of them, basically. Players that need to get form in. Maybe it's the first time we see Mesut Ozil, because he hasn't really played. He's more or less had like a summer off, hasn't he, in between pre-season, because of the off-the-field incidences and perhaps where he is in the manager's plans generally. But we need to get him back up to fitness if we need him firing at all cylinders come Christmas.
Slightly disagree with TN, by the way, in the chat. Just said Mustafi won't play under Emery again, barring injuries. I actually think Mustafi might be... he might actually be quite an important figure in that Europa League side, because the one thing he does have is experience. And if you're going to play quote-unquote kids, barring an away trip to Panathinaikos when you've got nothing to play for, if we remember that far back, Luis Boamorte and all that, you still need to have a little bit of experience. And Mustafi's not, you know, Mustafi's not a bad footballer.
I was about to say that.
He's just not quite, you know, he's not good enough for the levels we need going forwards. But he's not a bad footballer. He just tends to make a lot of mistakes, and you can get away with those mistakes in those early rounds. And I would argue even the secondary, maybe even third rounds.
The future of Maitland-Niles when Bellerin comes back, I think, will be huge, because it's then Maitland-Niles' opportunity to come out of the shadow of right back if he doesn't.
Yep.
If him and the club don't foresee that as his long-term position, Mustafi's ability to fill in at right back, certainly in early stages of competitions like that, will, because we don't have that in the youth academy. We've got a problem at fullbacks on either side. We don't really have anyone coming through. So I think for that kind of, those kind of games, we may see a Mustafi shoehorned in at right back.
Right, next question is going to be from Mr. Hollick, and it is from K-Man. He's put it in the live chat. As Dave, you may know, is no stranger to a late night sherry. He says, K-Man 1867, what Arsenal player, current or former, would you love to share a drink with?
Now, here's a question. Because...
I'll say all of them.
Yeah, there are so many. The one of the Arsenal players I never got to meet, never got to chat with, probably doesn't drink a lot, and that's Dennis Bergkamp. Sure. I would love to spend some time with that man. I have spent some time with one or two who enjoyed a sherry or two, or it might not have been sherry, but yeah, Dennis Bergkamp for me, thank you.
Who would you have had, Danny?
Not Tony Adams. That's no. I've got three.
Probably not a good end to that one.
Well, I don't drink, do I?
So, nor does he anymore.
There's a few in life that I'd love to meet. Billy Connolly, Michael Palin, Tony Adams, all the people that you've looked up to during your life. But I don't think I'd want to meet Tony Adams. I don't think he's that of an interesting person. And I think he's had such a hard life, and yeah, it's. I think he seems quite very standoffish, and plus he's a rugby person now, so I don't like rugby. I don't know. I've been lucky enough to probably. I think I'd say Rami Shaban, because of all the people we've spoken to, ex-Arsenal players, Dave Healy was really nice, but Rami Shaban seemed really, really nice. Perry Groves is like a dictionary when it comes to Arsenal stuff, and I'd like to speak to him about that, because just talk about some of the things he knows, dates and times and every single detail. But it's so, I mean, Ian Wright, you just want to meet him. Oh, yeah, Grant's put there, righty. You just want to meet Ian Wright, and he just hug you until you can't breathe, because I bet he smells lovely. And... Loki's put the Tuesday Club. And who else? TN's put Ray Parler. I'm not going to put one nose, just put how dear. So he's a bit mean. Josh Page has put Jack Wilshere. Loki has put Merson, Groves, Dixon and Co. Oh, that'd be a night out and a half. Yeah.
Surely the right answer is Arsene Wenger in all this, though, surely, isn't it? I mean, can you imagine the interesting stories that you might get out of Arsene quietly over a non-recorded interview?
They wouldn't let me into the places that Arsene would frequent, and I would think any of the places I would want to go would be very below him as well.
Yeah, that's fair point. Yeah,
I wouldn't want to. I'd be annoyed of him.
There is a long list.
Archie's
But he's got a book in him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I like
that. So I have to say that actually Tony Adams is a real nice guy to meet person to person. I understand what you're saying.
He's not the same as
a real nice guy.
I think Dave,
he's not the same as he is on TV, where he's quite standoffish. Jolly good. Right. I read a blog. I think it was George Bird, and I think he said it was one of our young defenders whose name begins with an O. It was either Olowu or O-O-M-O-L-E. Omoli, one of those two, can play at left back and has done a few times in the past. So we do have some kind of cover there, because what you were saying, Josh, but I didn't know that until I read it. Back to the questions. One for Chris.
Listeners, if you also get Iwoli, don't scratch it, okay?
right, this is from... they always call him Mayank in the chat, but he said to me, we can call me Mike, so there you go. He says, does Chambers play against Watford in place of either current centre-backs or maybe along with them? I feel he was decent when he played and should get in ahead of Luiz, because the bloke played two games, first two of the season, did nothing wrong, did he?
Yeah, hi, Mike. Thanks for the question. The short answer is no, I don't think so. I think what you're going to start to see over the next few weeks, particularly with the Europa League coming back in, is essentially two different sides, two different defensive lineups where possible. I think you'll see Chambers and Rob Holding interchanging with Mustafi so that we can get Holding's fitness up. I think you see Bellerin will start to come into those Europa games as well. I think the first choice back four will be what you see now in terms of Premier League. It will be Tierney will get in ahead of Kolasinac, I think, and before Bellerin, because Bellerin realistically is another 2 months away yet. I think AMN will continue at right back, and you'll see this partnership between Sokratis and David Luiz will continue in the league games. I'm not against that. You know, I think Callum Chambers was good in those opening couple of games, but ultimately, you don't buy David Luiz to leave him on the bench. And I think Chambers will... I think with Chambers, it's very much a case of this is now his opportunity to play games in the Europa League and make an impression and force his way in, because that's what Rob Holding did. I do think Emre likes Chambers, but I think he probably likes David Luiz and Sokratis' experience, and I think he'll see that as a partnership he wants to build. So... no, I don't see it against Watford, but I do think he'll see plenty of game time in the Europa League.
Josh?
I agree with that. Because if you think about it, there's no way Chambers is going to replace Luiz, because he's a right-sided centre-back.
Yeah.
Holding's problem is he's a left-sided centre-back, and that's where Luiz is playing. So I do think they are going to be the pairing for the Europa League. And whatever the League Cup is called now, the Caribou or whatever it is. And I feel sorry for Rob Holding, because I think he has the potential to be a better player than Luiz.
Almost just needs to bide his time, doesn't he? Because Luiz and Sokratis, people forget what Luiz is, what, 32 now? Sokratis, 30s as well? Yeah.
Chris, we've got 17 minutes.
Sorry.
Josh, can you go to our DRMS private chat and read what I've put there? You can do 5-4 and I've sent it to you. Steve Rogers is in there, not Captain America. Do you see I have tickets for Villa? There's another person I'll be meeting at the game. Woof. Yes.
The first Arsenal fixture that's going to be an attendance of four people, because just no one's going to go knowing you're there.
How dare you, sir. Right, next question for you, Mr. Hollick. This is from Marblehawks TV. He says, does it matter if Emery doesn't have a defined style like Wenger, Pep or Klopp?
Pretty much, yes. He needs to decide very quickly what he's going to be doing, because he is changing his system from game to game. And I can kind of understand the issues that is causing the players. And we were talking about earlier against Tottenham about the three he picked in midfield. I thought we could have done something different. But again, who the bloody hell am I? But it's just so very difficult for them to switch from game to game to game. And I think we've now determined, okay, right, that front three is the front three. That rules out the opportunity of a back three. And so you have to decide what you're going to do in front of that. Give them a few games to get used to what they're doing. But that's, to me, that's logic. To him, he thinks his players are intelligent enough to deal with the changes.
Lovely. Right. One final question for Josh. And then Josh, after this, do Fife's forum, Fifi's forum. From Mike Hertz, he says, would any of you gents play Willock ahead of Xhaka? So, Josh, you stick to answering that because we're in a bit of a rush.
It depends on the opponent, to be honest, to really sit on the fence to answer that question. It's not something I'd do straight away. I think we've got enough consistency in Xhaka's body of work in terms of end results to kind of say that, although in individual mistakes, you can say, yeah, he is a problem in that position. He's not necessarily costing us, you know, we didn't get relegated last season. He's not costing us every game. I would continue with him in the position. I think it's more like Torreira coming in to replace Xhaka. Willock and Xhaka, in terms of the positions they play, I don't think are similar. It's like Davis was saying about Holding being a left-sided centre-back. Again, I don't think Willock can play that Xhaka position. I don't think he's the man we want in there. Certainly he could replace him if Torreira then drops deep and we're looking at it in that kind of instance. But to replace Xhaka's position on the field, no, not Chris Willock for me. Or Joe Willock, sorry. Not Chris Willock.
I'll answer that question quickly, Danny. I'd play Josh instead of Xhaka at the moment.
I am injured. That's the only downside.
I'd still play you ahead of Xhaka. I'd play Danny instead of Xhaka.
Well, there you go. I think TN has got it. Guendouzi, Torreira, Pivot, and Ceballos ahead. I think that's the logical one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Josh.
Yes. Thank you, Danny. Let's do Fife's forum. All the way from Greece, I believe this question has come from. Has it come from Fife or not?
This Park
Fifios, I believe.
Exactly. So, yeah, we will call it Fifios Forumus. I should do better with that.
We're very sorry.
Yes. So the question we asked was, we always have a player the fans blame for everything, from Aboué to Mustafi to Xhaka. Who was the most undeserving of that group? So Daniel Mage. It's not Mage, is it? It's taken out the thing. But anyway, Daniel has said Bellerin, Iwobi and Wenger all come to mind. Trevor Dempster has said Aboué gave his heart and soul to the club. Danny, this one was cut off as well, I think. It just stops halfway through. Just as the others. And then for Kyle, he said, for me, the one who deserved it least would be Maitland-Niles from last season. Mike has come back to us with got to be Rambo. Well, I think that's a great one there. Before the amazing season, he came in for it pretty bad, but then turned it around in the best way possible. And I think even after he did that, it was... you know, almost jury was out with some fans as well. And Marble Halls TV, Aboué, he contributed to the Champions League final run as a relative youngster in the side. And I think that was all the responses we got from Fife's forum.
I've been and checked the one from Trevor, and it was emoji of a facepalm. So the others... I hadn't... Actually, for once, I hadn't made an error. So, Chris, if you do gentlemen's nods and then wrap it up.
I will. Shall I just do... I can do mine first, I suppose, can't I? Friend of the show, Devon, who is... what is Devon's Twitter?
Devon for real.
Devon for real, thank you. He has done an awesome thing. He's done a YouTube show, which is called For Real Sports. If you go onto YouTube and put in four, as in the number four, real, and then space sports, you will find a video with Devon and his friends called Sights and Sounds Away Days. And it's New York Red Bulls game, I believe, against Atlanta United, looking at that first picture of the video.
Atlanta.
Yeah. There you go. So I read that
a little while ago, didn't he? I think he's got another one coming out tonight about the Lamar Cup,
which yes, is the American
makeup, I think.
He has indeed, yeah. And they're good. I love these sort of videos because they give you a good insight as to like the fans' perspective, particularly in other countries, very, very sort of different leagues and whatnot. So, yeah, give Devin a little follow. He's been on this show before. He's a Gooner as well. He's over in the States, and he's putting out some good content. So have a little watch. It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but it's one of those things that if you've got 10 minutes, might be worth a watch. You might find it good. So give that little tickle and give Devin a follow. And if you like it, share it, because that's how people get their shows out there, just like us. So, yeah, give it a go. Right, shout-outs. Josh, who you got?
Oh, I was just double-checking the name of this one.
No,
I've got one. It is to Chris Lodato, and it's to all of our other listeners on the Never Eat Shredded Wheat east side of America, who are currently getting battered, I believe it's by Dorian, the hurricane. And for everyone out there, just to stay safe. If you hear the wind blowing and you're sitting in watching YouTube, bugger off, get out of there.
Or just drop a nuke in it, apparently.
Yep, or that. So mine is to Chris and all our listeners in Florida, and I think it's going up to Carolina. So anyone on that East Coast, stay safe.
Yeah, well said. I did tweet a link to I follow some the Bimini Shark Lab based in the Bahamas, who do some fantastic shark research. Anyone knows me knows I love my sharks. They've been doing some really good Instagram posts and videos of the devastation out there in the Bahamas, and they've set up a GoFundMe page, so anybody who has been affected by it or can offer a few quid, every little helps. They've been absolutely devastated over there, so yeah, check out that link. Well said, Josh. What about yourself, Dave?
I'm going to give a shout out to @AFC_Islington74, who has his first book now available. So do check out his link. It's absolutely wonderful read. I've also done a preview of it. Go back and look and search for it on Goonarlic. But yeah, definitely. Darren Berry, great guy. Lovely to see the book. He's been through an awful lot, and I know it's a great personal achievement for him.
Yeah, well said, well said. And he's a top fella as well. And if Dave's the sort of guy that if you haven't come across his work before, you probably have, and you've probably retweeted it without knowing who it is. He makes some fantastic memes and GIFs, and particularly focused with Sol Campbell and a trophy. He makes some crackers with those. So, yeah, give him a little follow. He's a top. I think he's been on here before, hasn't he, Danny, as well? We've had him on before, haven't we?
Back in the early days, yeah.
May not be for under-18s.
No. Well,
me and Jason him are doing a review of the book in the International World. I've got the book
seamless.
Here.
Seamless plug. I thought you might be. Good stuff. Danny, who are you tickling and fiddling with and doing things you shouldn't be with?
This will be a two-parter, as always. Thank you to all the people who donated during the live show against Spurs. Michael Hernandez, Marquise Hodges, Jim Howson, Sahal Ibrahim, Stefan Edwards, Blair Slater, Yvonne Okoffer, and Jay Rob. And also, I'm not sure if I've done this one before, people have been sending us money for the podcast. And I say, is that for me or is that for Chris? And they say, no, this is for the podcast. So I'm not going to give you surnames. Don't want to embarrass you. But it's Simon, Stefan, Mark, Thunder is in there. Martin, Michael's in there. Richard is in there. Loki's in there. Richard again. I don't know why he's done it twice. And Michael again. Sometimes I do tend to cut and paste like an angry badger and put too much of them in there. And so, yeah, some of you people are in the chat box. So thank you for everybody who ever sends us any money. And Chris, now you need to close it. And then remember, Chris, after this, we do that thing where we just leave, we say goodbye, and then we chat like tools for 5 minutes, and then we can talk about what's coming up after this show.
This ain't my first rodeo, all right? I know what I'm doing here. I'm not you.
I'm telling the listeners so they know not to bugger off when you say goodbye.
I see. Okay, well, listeners, don't bugger off because we're going to stick around. Yes, okay. Well, all that remains for me to do then at this stage is indeed say thank you so much for watching, for listening, for following, for tweeting, all of that good stuff. We really, really appreciate you. My thanks to the panelists. So thank you very much to Dave and to Josh. Thank you, sirs.
Thank you very much.
Ta very much.
Danny, you have to be here. Listeners, you don't, but we appreciate you being here. We love you very much. That was a Bird Cup Wonderland. And yeah, we're all off to sign for Newcastle for 120 grand a week. Good night.
Who went to Newcastle for 120 grand a week?
Oh, Michael Owen.
Oh my god. This is what I have to do.
Bloody hell, Danny.
I know you sleep 14 hours a day, but like, honestly,
what's happened? What have I missed?
Have you not seen the beef between Shearer and Owen?
Nope.
Oh my god.
This is what you know. I don't live
this,
my life. This,
I'm pointing the right way. This is what we have to work with. This. Honestly, I really do.
What are those twats arguing about?
We'll let you go and look it all up because it would take too long.
It got so big that the Mirror started doing a live blog on it.
John Cross has been literally sat in his pants like for hours. Oh, well, there's an image. Yeah. It's got a bit beefy. Let's say.
Although the new bit of beef that has come up, have you seen what Man City have done?
Oh yes,
their new signing partner for the team. Oh, come on, not, guys!
Don Wiley with me. I haven't seen it either.
It's right up there with some of the worst choices, and the wording in the logo is just.
So the Manchester City women's team, not the men's team, just the women's team, has been sponsored by Dylon Colour Catcher, which I believe is a device you throw in your washing machine to stop your colours running. Yeah.
What, is this 1972?
I believe so. Still is up here.
Jesus. That's not good. But consider most of the people I know that talk about women's football are men.
You need to listen to the offside rule.
Tim Still does a podcast about women's football, and I've listened to one episode, and it's very good.
Yeah.
I think it's Tim Still. I'm sure it is.
Yeah. So that is, yeah. A week it's been for misogynists and racists. Oh, superb, isn't it?
Politics. Stop it. Next thing you read, Josh, can you recreate that Rees-Mogg thing on your sofa just for the boys and girls at home?
I can also do the one from the Emirates. I'm not putting my legs anywhere higher on this couch. There's already been complaints about potential slippages of my shorts, although I'm in trousers.
We can't tell where your legs end and where your white wall start. You're like a human green screen. Chris,
You remember all those things about the news readers who would be sat there in a shirt and tie and nothing on underneath?
Yeah.
I'm sat in here in the Arsenal top and my pyjama bottoms. I am not standing up.
I'm not because I'm too fucking lazy, basically. Somebody accused me of being a full kit wanker the other day.
I mean they got half of it, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, absolutely. maybe back in the day, but not so much now.
You meant the full kit, obviously, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was it.
Never in doubt. Oh, God. Yeah, fun times. Fun times. What can you say?
Pressing buttons here at the moment.
You're frantically trying to Google what's going on between Shearer and Owen now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm trying to get it so that I can show people.
You should.
I have to open and put this in another browser. Then I can do this. Then I can go share screen, Chrome tab. And I think this, just across our fingers. Hey, there we go. Chris, tell the wonderful listeners what that is all about.
Well, that right there. They are the wonderful, wonderful people who have donated to the Pirates Fund. So thank you all to you. Massively, massively appreciate it. Just a reminder, these are the shirts. If you're still interested, if you want to buy them, if you don't, that's up to you. We've had the first worldwide world reveal of the away shirt. My camera's over there.
Hold on.
There it is.
I'll make you bigger.
Tell me the ones that were in yellow are the winners.
That's us. That's ABW. But there's I've got it done. No one can think it's fixed. Go on, Chris. Show them a high.
Chris, I was going to say, I can't believe you didn't say to Danny you'd pop round Millets to pick him up a shirt in his size.
Minute, oh yeah, or the ten size.
Yeah.
When it comes to doing the new ABW shirts, they don't come big enough, so I'm going to have to go and buy some myself, send them to Jay so I can get some made.
Oh, Danny.
Seriously,
does that mean they're going to be slightly smaller this year?
I don't know.
Probably.
I'd like an extra small.
Well, we only got 2XL, I'm afraid, Danny, so that rules you out. But they are they're the third prizes, but everyone's more interested in the first and second prizes, I'm sure. But yes, Danny, that list you put up was the very kind people that donated to the Pirates, Fund. Just to let you know, I'm sure you know this already, but just so you know, this is nothing to do with me going on holiday, I'm afraid. I wish it was, but it's not. This will go directly into our club. It helps fund things like if we need to replace nets. This year we've had to buy new corner flags and 3 sets of boards, which we didn't have
insurance.
I mean, it goes towards the whole package. And next season, we're hoping, fingers crossed, if we're still a club, we're hoping to move to a private pitch, because we've just been told out of the blue that we're now going to have to share our changing rooms, which we just spent a lot of time and effort decorating and making our own. And now the council, well, at one point in the league, have just lumbered us with another club that we have to share with. So all that effort, now it's not even going to be ours. So we're going to try and get a private pitch next year. So all of these things cost money, and your kind donations help us to sustain ourselves, if you will, and hopefully kick on a bit further. All that we need now.
How do the fans feel that you're going to move potentially to a soulless bowl of a new stadium?
Both of them have said that, to be honest, as long as they get a new manager, they don't care. you know, that they just want the manager gone. So that's all that they care about at this stage. But, you know, the Carpenter Up movement is still going strong, I'm afraid. It's sad times, but, you know, started the season so well with a good win against one of the league favourites, and then we lost 3 on the row. So, but now we're on a 2-week break while I'm on holiday, so we can regroup and go again.
International break for all those call-ups, right?
Exactly. Yeah, all of our players have gone on international break, on international duty. I'm going abroad to spread the good name. But yes, just before we do the draw as well, we've come up with a sort of a new idea this year, or a bit of a take what we did last year, where anybody that does want to buy one of our shirts, we're trying to get hashtag Pirates Worldwide going. So we're trying to get as many shirts as we can in the most obscure places around the world. So last year, I think we got one of our chaps in Norway. I think there's one in Sweden.
In
hell, absolutely. There's one in Australia, there's a couple in Canada, a couple in the US.
Wasn't that Bad Sawdoff or something?
Say again?
Wasn't his username Bad Sawdoff?
Bad Warsdorf, I think it is. Yeah.
A million miles from it.
We got loads. But so what we're doing this year is, for anybody that buys our shirt, we're obviously customising them, but where you see one of our shirt sponsors at the moment on this sleeve, ABW will be staying on this sleeve here. So as you can see there's ABW and Gav's logo there. On the opposite sleeve, where we've currently got one of our kit sponsors, what we're going to be doing is putting the number of the person who's bought the shirt. So in other words, if you're the fifth person that's bought a shirt, you will have number 5, and then your country of origin and maybe the state or the area. So for example, for me it's Plymouth, so it'd be Plymouth and then England, and we're going to individually label the kits so we can pinpoint around the world where you be. So it's just a little gimmick, but it's nice, and we're going to add you to our new club website, which we're building as well. So so if you would like to own a shirt, if you'd like to buy one, none of that 50 quid Sports Direct bollocks. We don't charge that. We're a lot less than that. Mm-hmm. And we do free UK postage. So if you want one, get in touch. But yeah, I think we should get onto the draw, Danny, shouldn't we? Let's put these people out of misery.
Chris?
Are we doing a separate show?
Separate show for that. So that everybody can go and watch it on their own. Because it's we're now four minutes past Holick and he's got to go.
Okie dokie.
So just wrap up the extras, and then we shall be back in 10 minutes to do the live draw. So if you're one of the lucky 37 who donated, then I will put all the numbers up and you will see the live numbers and the live draw all at once.
Danny, if you want to do it now, do it now.
Now I want to have it as a separate draw, as a separate video, so people can actually go back and watch it. They have to look through 2 hours, an hour and a half of us lot talking nonsense.
Good stuff.
You close this quick. We'll do another one in 10 minutes.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll do that now. So thank you very much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. This was the extras. Hope you've enjoyed them. Genuinely, thank you all for tuning in. I know I've been MIA for a season. I haven't done as many shows as I would have liked to have done. I'm hoping to change that this year. I'm sure you'll all be sick of me by October, so that'll change. But yeah, pleasure to speak to Dave and Josh as always, and Danny has to be here. But I'm off from the Holly Bobs now for 2 weeks. So enjoy yourselves, whatever you get up to. And I'm sure the other lads will look after you. But thank you very much for tuning in. Stay tuned for the draw. Danny, in the immortal words, Jason Davis.
Tappy, tappy, turn this shit off.
Bingo.
Can't believe you called it Holly Bobs.
As soon as I scored that goal, I was fucking livid. Splendid business.